Chapter 44. Ronnie. The Beach. Graham's voice is faint, far away. Something about God. A crack. Scream. Blood bubbles around me and seeps into the sand. A face. Graham's? No. Nick is. She takes my hand and pulls me to my feet. Kisses me on the cheek.
I can't believe this. I'm so sorry, Ronnie. Did he push you?
The waves lap around my ankles. My mind spins, searching for the answer. Did he push me? Or did I fall? The gatekeeper sits on a rock that's shaded green with seaweed. He's cradling Mrs. Hawthorne in his arms. The hammer. Never expected Charles to have such hatred. She must have been so afraid in those last few moments when he loomed over her. How did she feel? I clutch my stomach and vomit into the sea. Nicky's hands drag slowly down her face.
I can't do this. I can't. It's too much.
She's just 18. She doesn't deserve this. Just a baby. I take her hands in mine and kiss her forehead. Go sit on the rocks and rest. Everything's going to be okay. Dry grains of sand spun silver by moonlight stretch out around us. The campfire, cocktail bar, everything else has vanished, except for the beach. What does that mean?
Oh, Mrs. Hawthorne, I'm so, so sorry.
Nicky sobs, kneeling beside her. Her head shakes as if she can't believe the old woman's fate.
How could someone do that to you?
Mrs. Hawthorne smiles.
It's okay, Nicky. I don't feel pain here. I just feel sad. I thought it would have ended so differently.
I wish it too. You deserve more from Charles after giving him your heart and trust.
As did you, dear Nicky. I found it so difficult to see what Gio did to you. If only you had left straight after the christening. But then men, they have a way of making a woman insecure in her thoughts.
Life has frayed our edges, but in death, we have become friends, comforting each other and sharing our disappointments and joy. Perhaps we found our reflections in each other's stories along the way. Perhaps we were never so different after all. The gatekeeper leans down and strokes Nicky's hair. The knife. And so young. But why is he touching her in such an intimate way? I cup some water into my hands and rinse my mouth clean. The salt deepens the bitterness of what's happened to us all. Our only crime, if any, was love. Come, Ronnie, the gatekeeper says. His voice is lighter, the harshness smoothed away. It could be a trick of the breeze. I brace my shoulders and walk towards them. I can't believe what's happened to you, Mrs. Hawthorne. Charles is such a mild-mannered man. I would never have seen it coming. The gatekeeper giggles. Surely by now, after sharing so much, we're on first-name terms. Why would he laugh at such a time? He's still an evil old bastard, despite his signs of affection. He smiles at me before looking down at her. Veronica, don't you remember a time when they called you Ronnie, and before that, when you were just Nicky?
What's he on about? Even now, he's playing more tricks. Haven't we been through enough?
Her blue eyes grow brighter. It's as if a fog has been lifted from her gaze. She turns her head towards me, then to Nicky. My heart races, and my palms left to cover my mouth.
What does this mean? Why do we all have similar names?
I sink to my knees, and the coarse sand grates against my palms. Everything's too bright, too loud. Each grain of sand scratches my skin. The moonlight gleaming on the water, too dazzling to bear. The salt scent of the waves stings my nostrils. Nicky's breathing is like a roaring in my ears. The glitter in the gatekeeper's eyes is pin sharp, as if I'm watching him through a giant magnifying glass. And talking of names, Ronnie, after all your adventures with Graham, all those ups and downs, all that closeness. The gatekeeper gives a short laugh at the idea. Why don't you tell us his surname? I would blurt it out, spit it in his face, just to blast his grin into oblivion. Except, the name won't come to me. I pinch my skin. Think, think. Can it be, Ronnie? After so much effort to snare him, you don't even know his last name. Try harder.
Fuck you, you old sadist!
I scream, but the catch in my voice betrays the courage of my words, because the memories are flooding back. Graham at the podium, flustered by my teasing, fiddling nervously with a name card in front of him. I can't read it clearly. The writing's blurred. That old school inspector in his tweed suit. It was a business meeting. Of course. He'd use formal introductions, not just first names. But what was Graham's? In that bar. I shoved him away, and he bowed in defeat. And then he said, "I'm Graham." No last name. The airport in Paris. His name is covered by his hands. Why hadn't I seen that before? Questioned my memories? My thoughts, the gatekeeper says, have turned lately to Poe's story, The Mask of the Red Death. One day, in the future, Ronnie, you'll understand its fascination for me. In the story, people hide from a terrible plague by attending a great costumed ball. Like all such events, the most telling moment is, of course, when the masks are removed at the end of the evening. I leap to my feet, fear running down my spine. No, no, leave everything as it is. This doesn't have to end. Not this way. Take us back to the beginning. Back to the weaves. Please. I beg you. Back to the weaves. We were happy there. Just drifting. The gatekeeper dips forward slightly. The waves are of no further use to us. I feel, for our own tale, the time has now arrived for us to reveal our true selves. My vision alters, as if an invisible camera has spun its lens, and everything springs into sharp focus. I turn to Nicky and Mrs. Hawthorne. I see them as they are for the first time. The moonlight should be casting them into shade. Instead, every detail leaps out at me. I devour every plane and contour of their faces. Nicky utters a soft cry. The same thing is happening to her. Our masks have been stripped away. We're different ages, but time can't hide the similarities of our features. Now that we see each other, really see each other, we understand. We're one and the same person. We're all Veronica. I get up and walk over to where Nicky is kneeling. Her face is so familiar to me. The mirror has shown me its reflection 1,000 times. It's my face when I was 18. I reach out and my fingertips trace the line of her sharp jaw and brush over her full lips. Her tears are gone, but mine have just begun. All those wasted years of yearning and being rejected, of seeking out that one man who would create joy, who would love me. And it all ended with a selfish gambler, incapable of caring for anyone but himself. I cup her cheeks in my hands. She doesn't say anything, but her trusting eyes find mine. Was I ever so young, so innocent, so vulnerable? I kiss her and beg, "Nikki, I don't know what this is or what it all means, but if you get the chance, don't turn into me. Don't make the same mistakes I made. You're worth so much more. Will I really be a head teacher, just like you, Ronnie?" I kiss her lips. My lips. I'm kissing me. I have no idea. I was, and you are me. So maybe. She giggles. "Well, I'm not going to the sex parties, that's for sure. But it will be cool to be a head teacher." Mrs. Hawthorne stands beside me, stroking Nikki's hair. She's hypnotised by the texture and sheen of it, and is winding it through her palms. "It feels so vibrant, so new," she says. Then she turns to me, and her fingers trace my face. "Oh, Ronnie, you're so beautiful. I was so beautiful. Why did I never see that?" She wipes the tears from her cheeks. I see myself in her too. The years have etched lines deep into her skin. But she's me. "You married him?" I whisper. "Graham Hawthorne. Perhaps I did. Perhaps I didn't. It's not decided yet, is it? Was he the worst mistake of our life? Who knows, dear? There are always bad choices to make." I nod. "Charles." I gather her into my arms, and all three of us huddle together and cry. "What does it all mean? If this is all me, what happened to us? We've come to the end of our story, but nothing is clear. Are we ghosts of our past failures wandering around, unable to let go of what we thought we'd found? Our hearts so starved of love that even in death, we still seek it out. How fucking depressing." Nikki bites on her bottom lip. "I did that a lot when I was young." It means she's worried about what she might say, but can't hold it in. I stroke her arm and smile. "What is it, Nikki?" She shakes her head. "It's okay. It doesn't matter." She buries her face in my chest. I tilt her face upwards. Was I always so scared to speak my mind? Afraid to offend someone? "Spit it out, Nikki Wicky," I say. The words are alien on my tongue. Words I've never uttered before. But I'd heard them all the time. It's what my sisters used to call me when I was young. Nikki Wicky, Judy Fruity, and Mary Fairy. Three little girls clasping hands, dancing in the garden. At the beach making sandcastles. In the snow on sledges sliding down hills covered in ice. When Gio came to the door to ask me to go to Sicily, Mary was eating her dinner with me, and Judy was out with her friends. When Mrs. Hawthorne had her sisters around for dinner, they weren't just hers. They were mine. How had I not recognised them from the stories? Felt their love? The gatekeeper coughs. "It wouldn't have done for you to know everything all at once, Ronnie. You had to witness it all from someone else's eyes." His frame wavers in the pearly light, and the moonbeams are drawn to it, lighting him up, coruscating. We turn our eyes away from the glare, and when we look back, he's gone. In his place is a woman. Her blonde hair is perfectly styled. Her red lipstick gleams. A carefully drawn beauty spot rests on her cheek. Estee Lauder floats on the air. "Mum," Nikki says. It can't be true.
A bliss so fierce runs through me that its sudden pain leaves me breathless. How can it be? How did I not notice the way he spoke to me? The tease in his laughter, the glint in his eye that was so familiar. All the years without her, and she's been here beside me all this time. My body hungers for her touch, but can I? What if she disappears? What if it's the gatekeeper up to his old tricks? It's too much to bear. I force my head away from her. I'd rather walk into the waves. Veronica. Warmth creeps into my veins. I remember the voice so clearly. Sitting in front of the fire, listening to fairy tales as she brushed my hair. Reciting multiplication tables as we strolled hand in hand to primary school. The kiss of her lips whispering, "Good night, my princess." I race towards her and wrap her in my love-starved arms. We weep for all the missed years, for all the seconds she wasn't there. At long last, I'm back home, a child once more. I collapse at her feet, cradle her hands and gaze up. She's as beautiful now as she was before the disease destroyed her. And there's so much I have to see. So much stuff she's missed. All the tiny inconsequential scraps of everyday life we'd have shared. The gossip from a neighbour. The shade of a new lipstick. Nicky and Mrs. Hawthorne weep beside me. And Mum cuddles us in. All of us safe now, while love lives. But for how long? Chapter 45. Ronnie. The beach. Mum, what's this place? Why are we all here? I ask, nestled at her feet. Nicky's arms wrap around Mum's legs. Mrs. Hawthorne and I hold her hands. All three of us are scared to break contact with her skin in case she disappears. The gatekeeper's harsh tones have disappeared, replaced by my mother's soft Scottish accent. Ronnie, you should remember. After all, I've given you all back your memories. A clever girl like you really should have worked it out. The graveyard. The weird haze and my words begging her to come back to me. Is that all it took? Is that the secret to all this? Are we in heaven? Nicky asks. Mum grins down at her. There are some things I'm not allowed to tell you. She replies, but I'll tell you this much. It was me who brought you here. I wanted you to see yourself through different eyes, to know your life from a different perspective. Women are very good at giving each other advice, but they seldom listen to it where love or romance is involved. Now you've seen for yourself what you are, and what you used to be, and what will happen to you if you continue this way. I screw my face up and trickle sand through my hand. She gives me her signature lopsided smile. Ronnie, I want you to understand. 3 times I gave you the chance to tell me what love meant and what happened. 3 times you told the same dreary story about how you would find love from a man and then your life would be perfect. Is that it? Is that all your life amounts to? Being someone else so a man will love you? I sigh. It was always like this. Under Mum's gaze, every tiny misdeed was magnified and blown up. But when Dad left you, you were so unhappy. Your life was ruined. She throws her head back and her laughter sparkles in the night sky. You dafty. Is that what you think? That I spent my days pining for that old misery guts. Your dad didn't leave me. I kicked him out. If he was right here now, I'd tell him to get lost. Nothing would have changed him. Believe me, I tried. He's always been a waster.
Nicky's lips draw back into a shocked grimace, and the child in her punches the sand.
You kicked him out? That's not true. I was there at the bottom of the stairs watching. Sorry, but Dad left you.
Mum lets go of my hand and ruffles Nicky's hair. It's as if something's flown into my body and snatched my breath away. My fingers search until her hand is back in mine.
You saw wrong then, Nicky.
Why do you think he didn't keep in contact after that?
I'll tell you why.
It was punishment for me kicking him out.
He was furious and spiteful, and he knew the best way to hurt me was through hurting my daughters.
But you were heartbroken. I heard you crying.
Nicky says, Aye, I cried. That's true. But not one of those tears was for your dad. They were for you and your sisters. All the pain you suffered at losing him, or for worrying about how the rent would be paid, or how tired I was after cleaning folks' floors to put food in your mouths and clothes on your backs. For the shame of what the neighbours would say, and the horror of the words broken family. Oh, back in the day, he was charming and handsome, but it didn't last long. He became a drunk, and vicious with it. I couldn't have that. And after too many chances, it was time for him to go.
But Nicky's right. He did leave you. Sorry, we watched you both in the mirror from the bottom of the stairs.
I see. No, Ronnie. Jesus, this is hard. It was bad enough when there was only one of you. What you saw was me telling him to get out. I'm not the sort to wither away just because some man turns out to be an asshole. Is that what you told yourself? That without a man, you'd be a wee old maid? Mum shakes her finger at me. It's a big, beautiful world out there, Ronnie. It's time you went and got some of it for yourself. My mouth hangs open. Of all the revelations since I arrived back here, this is the one that sinks deepest into my soul. Dad didn't leave us at all. Mum kicked him out. I've spent my whole life trying to prove myself for all the wrong reasons. Mrs. Hawthorne says,
I understand you didn't want us to recognise each other, Mum, but I don't understand why you masked yourself too.
Come on. Mum replies, if you'd known it was me, you'd have told me a right load of rubbish instead of the truth. Have you forgotten all those lies you told me when you were trying to get out of trouble at school?
I laugh. I can hardly deny it. Oh my good God. She's seen all the sex scenes, the clubs, the orgies.
A blush paints me scarlet. And you can keep those sniggers to yourself, Ronnie Stevens, my mother says. You've got a long way to go yet.
How do you mean, Mum?
She stands and organises us into a line, youngest to oldest, just like she did with me and my sisters, inspecting us before we set off for school. We stand tall, push our shoulders back and hold hands. Ronnie, I want you to learn from these stories about life, about love, about yourself. You have to remember, it's never too late to change the future.
Nicky looks at her from under her eyelashes. What about me and Mrs. Hawthorne, Mum?
She smiles. Nicky, you're going back to your own wee life. You'll be fine. And I'll tell you a secret. Yes. You do become a head teacher. Mum moves down the line. And you, Veronica, don't you fret. All that stuff with Charles was just one possible future. That doesn't have to be you. If Ronnie sets herself straight, realises she deserves more, your life will be different, happier. Mrs. Hawthorne tugs my hand.
You'd better get a fucking grip, Ronnie. because I'm not going through all that shit again.
Through her refined accent, the swearing sounds awkward, but there's enough of me left in there to make me laugh. I got so posh, didn't I? How did that happen?
Living down south for too long, and well, to be honest, some of it's put on.
We all giggle, and Mum goes back down the line, hugging and kissing us, saying goodbye. When she gets to me, tears roll down my cheek, but I keep my head high.
I'll miss you, Mum. I sob.
The moonbeams flare, the shimmer surrounds us. They draw Nicky and Mrs. Hawthorne closer to me, and closer. And then, the light dancing across their bodies merges with mine. I close my eyes, and when I open them, I'm alone. But I'm not empty anymore.
You mind what I told you, Ronnie? My mother says. Love yourself the way I love you.
The beach whirls. I'm caught up in the air. The fog engulfs me and pulls me elsewhere. This time, I embrace it. I have things to sort out.
Ronnie. Oh, thank God you're alive. I've been so worried.
My eyes squint against the light. There's a tube coming out of my arm. And a machine beeping. Nurses stand around me, frowning with concern. Someone clasps my hand. I said, Mum. But the face comes into focus, and it's not. Hello, Graham. I smile. Chapter 46. Ronnie, Liverpool. The medicinal scent of antiseptic rises to a ceiling of white fibre tiles. I turn my head on the hospital pillow and my mouth tightens in pain. A clear plastic jug, half filled with water and ice, lies on a grey plastic cabinet. Beside it stands a metal pole. A brown box hangs from it, its front covered in tiny computer screens and dials. Welcome back to the land of the living, someone says. A nurse smiles down at me, her auburn hair pulled into a tight ponytail underneath a white cap. Then it comes back to me. The nurse's grey faces, the IV, and Graham's thank God. My fingers trace my hand, but I find nothing. I sigh in relief that it's gone.
Where is he?
I ask, my voice hoarse. Mr. Hawthorne, well, you woke up momentarily, then fell back asleep. He said he couldn't stay, had some sort of important thing to do, but that he'd drop by later on. Something to do, or someone, blonde or a brunette. He wouldn't care. He likely just dropped by the first time to make sure I was still alive. That it hadn't become a police incident.
You gave us a bit of a scare when you first got here, you know. Blood everywhere. But it turned out it was just a scalp wound. They always look worse than they are.
Where am I? She crosses over to the jug and fills a paper cup with water and places it in my hand. I gulp down greedily. It softens the burn in my throat. Liverpool Royal Hospital. And it's no wonder you're thirsty. You've been asleep for most of the day.
What's wrong with me?
She laughs. Amazingly, nothing, except for the gash on the back of your head. I hear you took quite the tumble down a flight of stairs. You're lucky nothing was broken. She looks at the readout on the computer equipment, nods in satisfaction, and mutters to herself, turns. We can do away with this now. And unclips a white peg from a fingertip. Placing my palms down on the mattress, I push myself up to sit. But pain stabs my side and shoves me down. Memories filter in. Graham shouting, plummeting through the air,
grasping for the banister, the floor rushing towards me. I blink back tears. You'll need to be careful for a couple of days. There's nothing broken, but your ribs are a bit bruised. She hands me a mirror. That other bruise on your forehead is going to take a lot of covering up. I'm not sure how you managed to bang the front of your face and the back of your head at the same time. You must have somersaulted down those stairs. I blush, too embarrassed to explain that the bruise is a consequence of butting Graham in the face. When can I go home? Doctor says one more night for observation because of the knock on your head. But I'm sure you'll be out of here tomorrow, first thing. I don't argue. Attempting to get out sooner would make me a fool. She bustles around the bed, scribbling on forms, collecting notes and adjusting my pillows just so. I'll check in on you in a little while, she says, and closes the door softly behind her. My thoughts drift to a dream from last night, about stuff I'd buried deep in my mind for years. It must have been the medication, or maybe it was a reaction to my near-death experience. However, I'd survived one of those before. Gio was a gambler who'd swept me off my feet when I was young and naive. He tried to kill me once, but at the last minute, snapped back to reality and threw his weapon to the floor. He'd beg for forgiveness. He said he'd get help and, like a fool, I'd agreed. 2 weeks later, he lost his wages at a racecourse and I was back at Mum's door, telling her everything, letting him in my broken heart. When the sadness lifted, I visited my gran's and sat in the living room with a bacon roll. I didn't eat eggs anymore. Grandad reminded me with a cuddle. Love is a choice, wee Nicky. Remember, people must bring you sunshine, or you make it for yourself. He was right. So I'd made my first choice there and then. I'm not Nicky anymore, Grandad. From now on, my name's Ronnie, and I'm going to university. I'm going to be somebody. He'd patted my arm. That's right, Ronnie. With a name like Veronica, you have plenty of choices, so you can be whoever you want. I turned onto my side, thinking back to when Gio had disappeared in Blackpool, stinking of aftershave, and I'd called Susie for support. Where was she now? My God, the fun we'd had together. The boozy nights out, the drunken nights in, the long phone calls talking crap, and Paula's warm smile as she drew me into the safety of her family. How had I allowed Gio to steal all that away from me? And what about Tara? We'd been best friends. I grin at the memory of us in that bar. Tara, with her bouncy blonde hair, yelling at a pack of snobby guys and sending them fleeing, dicks between their legs. I clamp my hands over my eyes. How could I have talked her into a threesome with Graham? Disgust clings to many parts of my past. Our relationship has changed forever. Or had it? We'd been Thelma and Louise, rip-roaring through the nighttime clubs and bars. Was there a way back to that friendship, torn apart by Graham and his sleazy desires? And my sisters? The car rides to the seaside, jumping up and down in the back seats and anxiously waiting for the first glimpse of the sea. Shopping trips to Princes Street, looking for just the right dress for a Saturday night out and a cheeseburger in the Wimpy when all was lost. Mum saying it's impossible to not find something to wear in a road full of shops, and us giggling and trying the catalogue. Quarrelling and squabbling together, but always making up in the end, as bonded as only sisters are. How had I drifted away from such love? Mum's right. It's a big, beautiful world with beautiful people in it. It's time I got myself back into it. The thought is freeing, but it came from a dream, didn't it? A knock on the door. The nurse peeks in around the edge. She smiles. Someone to see you. Graham slides past her into the room. Ronnie, you're looking better already. I'll leave you two to it. Just press your bell if you need any assistance, Ronnie. Graham throws her a wink and she walks off down the corridor with a skip in her step. A thick white plaster is taped across his nose. I suppress a giggle. His nose bends to the left into a weird shape. His handsomeness is marred, spoiled forever. I should be guilty, but I'm not. He sits on the edge of my bed and flashes me a grin. We got ourselves into a bit of a mess with things. He smooths out the green hospital blanket and tucks me in. But we can get things back on an even keel. I'll always love you. Is he worried I'm going to call the police on him? He's not worth the effort. And anyway, I'm still not sure if I fell or he pushed me. And my proposal still stands, Ron. We'll get married and live life our own way. Who cares what anyone else thinks? He jacks his thumb over his shoulder. That nurse, for one. Bit of a looker, eh? I ring the bell by my bedside. I need an audience for this. The nurse puts her head around the door again, eyebrows raised. Then I finally reply to Graham. You're a cheating fucking bastard. I wouldn't marry you if my life depended on it. You're not worthy of me. You don't get to have me. So take your slimy proposal, shove it right up your stinking ass, and find some stupid bimbo who'll fall for your lies. Though with that nose and your tiny dick, good luck finding one who'll be interested. Now fuck off. The nurse's eyes are wide open, and so is her mouth. Graham stands, clapping his hands. What a performance, Ronnie. You nearly had me convinced for a minute there. It's okay. I get it. You're jealous of the attention I'm giving the nurses while you're in such a state. But there will always be plenty for you too. Don't worry. Now, just get yourself better and I'll see you around. I wink and he struts out. I scrunch up my nose in disgust. What a sleazebag. Thank God we didn't move in together yet. I'll apologise to the nurse later, but I knew he was going to hit on her. I just hope my little performance saved her from that. I slump back against the pillows, feeling lighter than I have in years. It's as if I've been set free. Even the air is clearer, my pain duller. That was one change. More are going to come. And as to whose ideas they are, does it matter? The nurse told me I'd been sleeping all night and day. So maybe I did just dream about Mum and Nicky and Mrs. Hawthorne. Who cares? Whether it was Mum who told me or I told myself, it's time to change my life. Mrs. Hawthorne, if you're out there in some parallel universe, I hope you saw what I've done. I changed our future. God, for some reason I need a ciggy. I swing my legs over the bed and ease my way across the room to the formica built-in wardrobe, fumble in my handbag for the pack of cigarettes I always hide there, just in case. I'll need to sneak outside when the nurse is busy elsewhere. Something gritty is in the lining. I pinch it up and hold it out to the light. Grains of sand roll between my thumb and fingertips, then cascade onto the floor. Chapter 47. Ronnie, Edinburgh. The traffic outside my flat window sounds louder than it used to, and I've only been away for a day. I exhale slowly and allow the noise to wash over me, relieved at last to be home. Pain still nags at my ribs, and I've had to plaster concealer over my bruises, but I've more important concerns to fret about. There's something I must do. Of course, I could just hide here and drown my anxieties in a glass of Cabernet and leave the past to ferment in the scent of sour grapes. But what would that achieve? The train ticket's burning a hole in my purse. But then it occurs to me, there's more than one errand to run. And why not order them in a way that suits me best? I ring for a taxi and gather my things. As I exit the station, all the old familiar buildings, with a nod to the past, welcome me home. The pub we first got drunk in, under layers of foundation and eyeshadow to look older than our years. Across the road, Blockbusters, where we spent hours on a Friday night choosing perfect videos to watch. The bus stop where we'd sit eating chips, hoping for boys to stroll by. A taxi drives past. I wave my hand and after a few seconds, jump in. He asks all the usual questions. Where are you from, lass? What brings you back? Then he drops me off at the end of the street. Typical. He couldn't be bothered to find the street number. Is this such a good idea after all? I could turn back, run away. Gritting my teeth, I grind down the insecurities and consult the yellowing fragment of paper which shows an old address of a past life. It's been so long. Time passes. People change. Do these few words written in fading ink identify an address where someone still thinks of me, cares? But my mother's words echo. There's still time to make a change. I straighten my back and march down the road. It's a nondescript door. The paint's faded. Children's bicycles sprawl across a tiny unkempt lawn. A faded nylon tent gives evidence of secret hideaways where children escape the rules of adulthood. This is a home where family life supersedes the priorities of neighbourhood niceties. It's now or never. I take a deep breath and ring the bell. When Susie answers, my eyes narrow, trying to please her. I've carried her image in my mind for such a long time, a grinning teenager with mischief sparking her eyes. But she's aged, like me. Here and there, the odd wisp of grey in her long dark hair, laughter lines creasing the corners of her eyes. She glares at me, as if I'm a debt collector.
Yes, what do you want?
How do I respond? I step back from the animosity. But then, her eyebrows rise and her hands reach up to her mouth.
Nicky! Oh my God! Is it really you? I haven't heard from you in 20 years!
She busts forwards, stepping across the threshold and hugs me tight in her arms. I sink into them and all the years of separation dissolve into that one moment of recognition. In her living room, coffee cups and plates and half-eaten fairy cakes are strewn around us. A beef stew bubbling in the oven warms the air. Her son, a skinny 12-year-old, is wolfing down leftovers while looking over at me red-faced now and again. I laugh.
Just you keep going, Malcolm. It'll save your mum from having to clear up.
Susie and I spend the whole afternoon giggling and reminiscing about our school days and how she was always the one who was late, sitting outside the headmaster's door, like a child on the naughty step, about drinking cider at the park and the crushes we had on Donny Osmond lookalikes who grew into middle-aged men with pot bellies. It served them right. About her two kids, Malcolm and Ellie, who's only three, and is sitting on my knee playing with my hair. About my career, and how I'd driven my way to school headship. Susie grinned and asked if I used the naughty step too, and I told her, nah, the staff and kids were too scared of me to misbehave, and we both laughed.
What about that Italian guy you were seeing then? Your mum said you went to Italy.
I screw my nose up and roll my eyes. Just another waster, Susie. You were right when you told me he wasn't good enough. She smiles.
A lot of people told you about guys that weren't good enough, Ronnie. I could never work out why you thought you had to change to get someone to love you. Why you were so obsessed with boys. You didn't have to pretend to be someone else, you know.
I nod. Well, all that's in the past. I'm never going to pretend to like cricket, Radio 4, or a nice brisk walk in the park ever again. We raise our coffee cups to the air and cheer.
Give me a minute,
Susie says, and walks out to the hall. I lift Ellie's fingers and whisper, this little piggy. She squeals and squirms on my knee, just the way I did when my mum told it to me. Fragments of conversation drift through the open doorway. Susie's phoning all the old gang. I wonder what they'll see.
Yes, yes, she's exactly the same, as funny as ever. She calls herself Ronnie now, but she's still a school head. I know, she's been away too long. On Friday, I'll ask her. Yes, I'll tell her. Okay, bye.
She comes bouncing back into the living room. Marie says to tell you lots of love, and we'll all meet Friday evening. Jen and Jill can make it too. I grin.
Why not? That's great. Let's do it.
I slide Ellie off my knee and get up. But now I've got to get going. I've one more person I have to catch up with. See you Friday. We hug, and she escorts me to the door, waving as I make my way down the garden path. I'll flag down a taxi later, but for now, I want to just walk and feel the sunshine. I need all the nourishment I can get before my next visit. The block of flats is run down. One of the stairwell windows is broken, and empty crisp packets flutter at my feet. The communal door hangs loosely from its hinges, worn out, uncared for. As I climb the steps, the smells of old cooking oil and something worse invade my nose. I shiver, remembering my flat in Mondello. On the third floor, the stairwell window panes are grimy and block out the light, making the flat numbers hard to read. When I rang the bell, nothing happens, so I rap on the door, and after a moment it creaks open. He's withered, shrunken. His once broad shoulders are stooped, and the sleeves of an old grey cardigan are rolled up over scrawny arms, the arms that once twirled me in the air. Hello, Dad. I see. He grunts and shuffles back inside. I follow. Living room walls are stained nicotine yellow, and a heavy coat of grease sticks to the air. Dad sits on a brown, sturdy chair, the kind they have in old folks' homes. Isabel, his new wife, nervously darts from the kitchen to give me a hug and a kiss on the cheek. I flinch and wipe my face clean. She throws a sideways glance at Dad and returns to her sanctuary among the pots and pans.
You look well for yourself, Nicky,
he says. He doesn't even know my name. That's how long he's kept his distance from me. I go by Ronnie now, Dad. He clicks a Zippo alight. Mrs. Hawthorne flicked that same lighter on and off until the gas ran out after he died, destroyed by her loss and regret.
Ronnie, eh? Well, you'll always be my wee Nicky.
The sheer hypocrisy. My fingers clench the fabric of my jacket, I keep the obscenities inside. He's not getting off that easily.
Do you want a cup of tea?
He flicks ash from his cigarette into an ashtray full of buttons.
No, and I don't want to sit down and talk about the weather either. I want answers.
What do you mean?
He mumbles. I stare at him, and he draws his tatty cardigan around himself. His gaze is everywhere, except where it should be, directly on me.
The day you left. The day Mum threw you out. Do you understand what that did to me?
It was all so long ago, Nicky. Just let things be.
He lights another cigarette, even though it's just been seconds since the last one.
It's Ronnie!
I shout, despite my best efforts not to.
Ronnie!
All right, Ronnie then.
Do you remember that day?
I know you do.
And do you remember leaving me in the street when you drove away?
I know you remember that too, because I saw you, watching me in your rearview mirror.
He hunches up in his chair and looks to the front door. Pots rattle in the kitchen, as though Isabel is trying to drown out our argument.
It was for the best, Hen.
The best? I was standing there, tears falling like rain down my cheeks, my arms out to you, begging you to come back. Do you know how long I stood there? Waiting, hoping.
I couldn't come back, could I?
Why not? You knew I loved you. I was your little princess. You told me you'd always protect me. But when it suited you, you fucked off without a backward thought.
The images are in front of me as I talk. Building sandcastles at the beach, following him to the water's edge and watching him collect water for the moat. Him pushing me on the swings, singing songs as we giggle. Snuggling into him as I tell him about my exploits at school, his eyes filling with pride. Sunday morning stories, cuddled together in bed. Him running behind me cheering when my stabilizers came off my pink bike. All those moments, all that love. Where was it meant to go when he left?
Why not, Dad?
He straightens his back, his voice harshening.
You bloody well know why. Your mother always had a thing about the drink.
He fakes a whiny voice.
You'll never amount to anything if you keep boozing.
He snorts,
as if it was her business. She was always above herself. Too high and mighty. I was never good enough for her.
He shifts in his seat, memories of old outrage folding his arms.
But what about me? If you wouldn't change for her, couldn't you change for me?
The leopard never changes at spots, Nicky.
Laughter busts out of me. This is his excuse for being such a waster. Some stupid old cliche.
I can't even be bothered to correct him on my name.
You're just like the rest of them, Dad. All those men I let into my life. I spent years telling myself I was the problem. But it wasn't me. It was you. It was them.
You don't know what you're talking about.
I sit down on the chair across from him. Photos of us as children are scattered around the room. On the back wall, there's one of him and his grandchildren cuddling in. My sister's boys. Over the years, they'd forgiven him. But I hadn't. I'd never spoken to him again. Until now.
Yes, Dad. Yes, I do know what I'm talking about. It's taken me a long time to realise. But now I know only too well. We women live in a world where we're surrounded by men like you. Selfish. Emotionally detached, unable to be honest, even with yourselves. And what happens?
Fuck all. That's what happens. Nobody says a word. Woman after woman gets their self-esteem destroyed. Nobody talks about the injustice.
Fuck's sake, we don't even admit it to ourselves. We're ashamed. Think it's all our fault. We let our voices be silenced by the fear of being seen to be needy or weak or a crazy bitch. We water ourselves down. He leans forward in his seat, scowling.
There's no need for that tone. You're just like your mother. I don't know why you can't be like your sisters. They still come around now and again.
I laugh at the effrontery. Do you know what happened that day you drove away? He looks down at his slippered feet, silenced. I'll tell you. You, with your big strong arms that hold coal all day long. You tuck my sense of self-worth into those powerful fingers, and you crushed, and you crushed, and you crushed until there was nothing left. He sniffs and dabs his eyes. I thought no one could love me, and if they did, they'd leave me one day, just like you did. If my own father couldn't stay, how could anyone else? I stand and wander through to the kitchen for a glass of water, but I'm really giving him time to think. Isabel hands me a glass. Behind her, a large pinboard is attached to the wall. I move closer. Newspaper cuttings, magazine articles, Ofsted reports. It's a homage to me and my career. Almost a shrine to who I am. It would be so easy to see this as love, to run and cuddle at his feet, be his little girl again. But I'm done with taking fragments of emotion from men and searching for their meanings. It isn't enough. If someone loves you, it's their role to show you. But then, I remember the pain Mrs. Hawthorne felt when he died. Am I brave enough to try? I drown my feelings with a gulp of water and walk back in. Dad, we're not going to end like this. I want you back in my life. We've so many years ahead of us to enjoy. We all make mistakes, but I'm not your little princess anymore. And I'm not Nicky. You come back to me on my terms, not yours. Do you understand? His bottom lip trembles. I'm sorry, Ronnie. I'm really sorry. I was a coward and weak, but I always loved you. No, you didn't, Dad. That's not love. Isabel is in the hallway standing by the door, wringing the edges of her apron. She gives me a nervous smile. You told him, dear. You told him right off. My footsteps light against concrete stone. I stride into the future. Mum's voice curls in a soft, Estee Lauder mist around me. Remember, Ronnie, love yourself the way I love you. I smile and whisper back. Don't worry. I won't water myself down for anyone anymore. Epilogue. Ronnie, 25 years later. Avoiding a patch of hard, sticky gum, I settle onto a park bench. My hand grazes against the ragged edges of carvings in the wood. My fingers trace along their ridges. Whoever MK and LG were, I hope their love spun an eternity. Mary calls me over to where my family gathers on the grass. She's pushing Dad in his wheelchair towards them. And like a toddler in a buggy, he's tapping his shoes against the footrest, hurrying her along. A cigarette dangles like a weapon from his grinning lips. This was her idea. A celebration to mark his 90th birthday. Under the shade of a sweet chestnut tree, my sister, Judy, is fussing with a gingham bag, setting out plates and plastic forks on a tartan rug. She smiles and pats a space beside her, and I ease myself down. Dotted around us, clusters of families sit with picnic baskets and coloured blankets.
From a smoky barbecue, the smell of sausages and burgers tanged the air. A couple of boys kick around a football, and Judy points them towards the play park at the top of the hill. They scamper off, passing the ball between them. Deja vu shivers up my spine. My brother-in-law pops the cork on a bottle of fizz, and soon we're all laughing and talking over one another, until my dad recounts one of his tall stories about how he once fought a dragon in Wales. And although we all shake our heads, we're entranced by his storytelling. My eyes squint against the sun into the distance. A man walks along the path into the park. He pauses, as though the heat has wearied him, and slumps down onto the bench I just left. He adjusts his tie and plumps up a red silk handkerchief in his jacket pocket. A little white dog curls at his feet. My handbag lies beside me on the grass. It's attracted the attention of some of the park's bees. Hopefully a gentle kick with my foot will make them settle elsewhere. But instead, this angers them, and they buzz closer to me. Much more of them than I first thought. Screaming, I draw back. The burst of noise draws the dog's attention, and he jolts up, barks, and bounds over. His owner jumps to his feet and runs behind him. "Jack, you silly dog, come back at once!" He shouts, but the dog ignores him, and the man can't catch up. I flinch as it scrambles up onto my knees. His tail is wagging in circles as he peers into my face. In the warm molten brown of his eyes is my startled reflection. It gives another bark, then snuffles around me, and his nose burrows into my cardigan pocket, almost as though he expects to find something there, like a biscuit or treat for a good little doggie. Our laughter sprinkles his antics, and my niece runs over and wraps her arms around his white fluffy neck. Panting, his owner arrives. He fumbles for the dog's collar and tugs him away. "How do you do? I'm Charles, and this rapscallion is Jack," he says, holding him back. "I'm dreadfully sorry about his complete lack of decorum. I've no idea what got into him. He's usually a rather timid little chap." Charles's eyes, cornflower blue, fix on me, and he scratches his chin. "I hope you don't mind me saying, but you seem familiar. Perhaps we've met?" His gaze draws me in, as though I have fallen through a mirror and am looking out from the other side. Charles, Jack, the picnics, even the bees buzzing around my handbag. I've seen all this before. A stray cloud covers the light of the sun, casting darkness across the ground, stretching all the way to the bench where Charles once sat. My eyes follow the edges of the shadow and, in the sudden gloom that surrounds the bench, a shimmering shape sets. A woman smoking a cigarette, observing all the fun of the summer's day, but not a part of it. I know who she is. I know her pain. She was me. But then she looks over and smiles. A burst of wind whisks the cloud away. The gloom evaporates, and as the vision fades, the warm laughter of my sisters draws me back. I haven't answered Charles, and he takes it as a rebuke. "I must be mistaken. Come along, you naughty dog. I'm so sorry for the intrusion. Please, do enjoy your day." He cradles him up into his arms like a baby and strolls away. Jack peers over Charles's shoulder, and his barks give way to plaintive whimpers. Just before they exit the park gate, a final sad yelp floats towards me. Tears glaze in my eyes. In a future that could have been mine, a lonely man met an unhappy woman sitting on a park bench. They made each other happy for a while, until it ended badly. but I could change it this time. Make it end well. It wouldn't take much to fix it. Another bottle of fizz pops, and Judy lights up Dad's birthday cake. As she carries it over to him, Mary and I follow behind. We stand before him, just as we did as children so many years before. His eyes glistening with tears, he blows out the candles and whispers,
"Thank you, girls."
His glance settles on me.
"For everything."
I bend forward, take his wrinkled hand, not unlike mine, and bring it to my lips. The pain of his passing will come soon, but not today. Judy slices up cake, wraps it up in lemon serviettes and passes it around. Dad picks at a dollop of strawberry jam and licks a finger coated in fondant.
"Even the cake's melting in this heat. We should have gone to Yellow Craig's like we did when you were wee. Had a paddle in the sea."
He grins.
"Can we? Can we please?"
My niece squeals. I steady myself with a palm on the grass. Salt brushes my lips and seasons my senses. An urge to find Charles and fold him into my arms overwhelms me. But then, a wave of other memories flood into me. A young girl lost and alone in a foreign land until she met Paola, who taught her to dance on a mountain top and gave her the strength to break free. Tara, with her halo of fierce curls, who stood up to anyone who watered her down. The friends from school and how they folded me back into their lives. The warmth of my sisters and all the memories that shape us.
And me.
And you, little Francesca, who swept the cockroaches away. I'm not the same woman I was before. Love already surrounds me. This concludes The Storytellers by Karen McKinley. Narrated by Olivia Thompson. Copyright 2022 by Karen McKinley. This unabridged audiobook is published by arrangement with Bloodhound Books Limited through Rights People, London, and was produced in the year 2022 by Tanta Media Incorporated, a division of Recorded Books, which holds the copyright there too. Please visit tanta.com for more information on our growing library of unabridged audiobooks.